You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
What up?
Oh my gosh.
What a night to be a sports fan in Kansas City. Not only are the Chiefs playing tonight, 7 o'clock hour Monday Night Football against the Saints.
7:20 kickoff.
Thank you. The Royals are in the playoffs playing the Yankees at 6:38 tonight.
That's right.
In the Bronx.
I don't even know where to begin. I went to the grocery store today, just pop in, pop out. Everyone is wearing blue and red. Dan, you and I did the same thing.
That's right.
I got a Chiefs vest on and a Royals hat.
Got my Chiefs shirt on, Royals cap.
People were hugging in the aisles of the grocery store. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
Dogs were playing with cats.
Yes, I don't even know what is going on.
What a time to be a Kansas City.
Man,
you know, I realized this morning that I've grown out of all my Royals gear, and that's sad.
Well, it is time to upgrade your wardrobe, Samuel.
You know, they made more than one shirt in the interest of a profit.
You could wait until tomorrow. Just, you know.
Whew.
I know.
Good time.
Case. I know.
Exciting.
They just announced that former Kansas City Chiefs running back Jamaal Charles will serve as this week's drum honoree.
Oh, good. Good.
At the Chiefs game. How are we going to watch this? Let's break this down. What are people going to do? We were talking about this last night. I can't watch it at home because by the time you go previous back,
you've already missed something.
I've already missed something on the app and my remote. To be in a place where there are multiple TVs tonight.
Like a Tanner's or something?
Yes, if you're not going to the game.
That's where the whole man cave thing came from. You needed multiple TVs in a space in the house that is dedicated to sports watching for days like this when you need two TVs.
I'm going to be honest, and I love the Chiefs, but when I get home tonight, I think we're
watching the Royals game. Mm-hmm. I know. What is happening?
Watching the Royals.
And I'm watching the Chiefs because they're on ESPN, and I have that. And I don't have whatever the Royals are going to be on.
I don't believe that's accurate. I think the Royals are on like TBS or
Max. Max HBO.
I know the Saturday night game was on HBO.
Right.
Which I do not have.
Well, it was also on TBS. Because I got back from Cancun like in the third inning or something. And it was on TBS. Hang on. I'm looking. Yeah, it's on TBS tonight.
Right. That's cable. A lot of people don't have.
So is ESPN, and he has ESPN.
Depends on the package.
So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull up the game on ESPN and then turn on 610 Sports Radio.
Or 96.5 The Fan.
Well, 96.5 The Fan is going to have the Chiefs game.
Oh, my gosh. It's too much.
I know.
I'm going to a Best Buy, and I'm just going to sit in the aisle where they sell the TVs and hope.
Will the Chiefs be on local TV? Is it?
Yeah, they have to be.
Right.
So if you're in market, it has to be on an over-the-air broadcast channel.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming they're either on CBS or
I think it would
Fox
be ABC.
4.
I know we are looking forward and not back, but I do want to say just one word about the missed call during the Royals game Saturday night.
25 cameras were focused on that play.
Gosh. Because we went to the Starlight Gala Saturday night, and they had the game on outside and in the area where the bars are located. But then once you went inside for the program, you know, they're raising money for this huge capital improvement campaign. The game was not on, and there were people quietly, you know, checking the score on their phones. It ended up, as you know, being, I believe, 6-5. But it was that call that even today players, and I think MLB released a statement about whether or not that runner was safe or out at second.
He was out.
He was out, and that would have made a difference. It would have made a difference.
Yes.
They're saying there were 25 cameras on that bag, but there was, quote, no clear and convincing evidence to overturn the ruling that he was safe. And I don't know that I buy that.
I have seen a picture where
it was Michael Massey for us,
right,
on second base that slapped Jazz Chisholm Jr.'s left foot before it touched the corner of second base. He was called safe. They reviewed it for a long time, 2-3 minutes, and then said there is no clear or convincing evidence to suggest we should overturn it. And even today, people are saying absolutely not.
I saw one picture where there is daylight between his foot and the bag.
Yes.
I'm looking for it right now to see if I can show it to you.
It's frustrating, Massey said, because the video I saw looked pretty convincing to me. In my opinion, it's one of those things that if something is not going to be overturned, then I don't really know what's clear and convincing. And I'm not sure the whole point of the system that we have with, mm-hmm. with reviewing it, right. if a call like that is not overturned. We tagged him. We could see the clear contact. We could see the daylight between his foot and the base.
Bobby Witt Jr. said the same thing after the game. Now, he has to be careful.
Yes.
He can't go criticizing the umpires because he'll end up getting fined. But he said, I just got back from watching the video, yep. and it is my opinion. I'm paraphrasing. It is my opinion. Here's the picture right here,
Dan. Oh, yeah.
So look at this.
You can see it.
So there's Massey's glove on his leg.
Yep. And there's the daylight between the bag and the foot. You correct. Can see it. Yes. Now, they have to make those decisions in 2 minutes. But isn't that why they're going to go to New York and review it or wherever they go to review
yes,
it and they look
exactly
at those little
why.
Things.
But they talk about clear and convincing evidence. We go back to the Baltimore game against the Chiefs where they joked, you should have worn white cleats.
Yeah.
It was obvious because he had black cleats on and it was on top of the white line.
Well, that was on him. That ruling was clearly in our favor. Anyway, I hope tonight that they're I just don't want it to come down to something like that where there's controversy this late in the season.
Okay.
Everybody needs to be on their A game. That's all I'm saying.
So what are you going to watch?
Both.
So you're going to a bar.
I just don't think I could do it at home because I'll be running back and forth like a crazy person. And I don't want to do that.
I think that's going to be what I end up doing, too, is going out somewhere.
And I love watching it at home. I love it when we watch games at home. But tonight, and I don't think I've got it in me.
So it's going to be on Channel 9 locally.
All right.
Good. ABC's got it. Good.
And so there are ways to manipulate the screens in your house and your computers and to pull up this one or that one.
What?
There are ways.
Well, someone just tweeted me and said, this is how you do it. She got a second TV and put the first TV on the ground in front of the second TV that's on the wall. That's mm-hmm. someone from Kansas City saying, this is how you do it.
Oh, that's exactly how I used to watch sports with my roommate.
Oh, my gosh, I love it. Anyway, what a time to be alive in Kansas City. Woohoo! Let's go.
Okay. All right. There is a hurricane.
Yeah, I don't want to be in Florida today.
Brewing in the Caribbean.
You made it back just in time.
Well, you see, the beginning of Hurricane Milton went through Cancun on Friday night into Saturday morning. Yes, it did.
Helene did.
No, Milton did.
Milton just started up in the Gulf.
I understand, but right. what it came from started just north of South America.
The tropical depression.
Yes. Correct. The system came across Mexico and now it's
right.
formed.
And so that went, it started north of South America, came through Cancun late Friday night, early Saturday morning. It wasn't that bad. A little lightning, a lot of rain, no big deal. And now that it's out into the Gulf, it has really intensified. It is now a Category 5.
You've got to be kidding me.
It is a Category 5 hurricane as we speak. Brian Busby is going to join us at 2:30 this afternoon. Darla J, former talk show host here at KMBZ, she and I were on the phone yesterday morning for about an hour, and she lives right outside of Tampa, which is right in the sights of Hurricane Milton. And I told her, I said, Darla, and she's like, what do you think I should do? I said, go to the east side of Florida and rent a hotel room like 6 or 7 stories up.
Go north.
Well, she can't go north because of the traffic.
Have you seen the traffic stall, Dan?
It's brutal.
It's what you think it is.
I've seen it. 275,
and we'll
the
ask Brian this.
Tampa Bay is packed with people leaving Pinellas County.
I'm going to ask Brian this. Listen to this from Twitter. Hurricane Milton has undergone one of the fastest rapid intensifications ever observed in the Atlantic. It is now a 175-mile-an-hour Category 5. It ties as the 4th strongest Atlantic hurricane in history.
Mm-hmm.
One of two things is going on here. They are so exhausted, still standing in front of debris piles from Helene, that they're focused on Helene and everything that needs to happen with still trying to find the dead from that storm.
230 people confirmed dead
yes,
so far.
Yes, and so many missing that I don't think anyone was really paying attention to Milton.
Well,
and
then it happened,
but it happened so quickly on top of that, that if you are down in the Gulf, they did not even have time to catch their breath with this,
now,
Scott.
We're still 2 days out from impact here. So is there a chance, and we can ask Brian this, is there a chance that it's going to lose power?
Not churning in the warm, hot tub waters in the Gulf.
They're expecting the storm, forecasting it right now, to diminish in wind speed down to a Category 3. However, the problem for this track, if it goes in a certain direction towards Tampa Bay and the entire Tampa Bay metropolitan area, which includes the city of Tampa, but also St. Pete and Clearwater and Pinellas County, which got storm surge from Helene, the problem is going to be the storm surge.
That's what they're really concerned about. 18 to 20 feet. And I was watching an interview this morning with the mayor of Tampa. So they did get some damage from Helene last week. Everybody's being advised to put all your, you know, whatever got ruined out on the curb. We're going to come pick it up. The contractor in Tampa never showed up. So everything that's on the curb will be on the curb on Wednesday.
Florida. I have seen, I've actually been chatting with some folks that live down in Indian Rocks Beach, which is in Pinellas County, which is right there on a barrier island on the Gulf. And there, all those communities have been putting out all the debris that they, you know, suffer from the storm surge and all the damaged stuff, piling it up. And there have been today, starting this morning, caravans of dump trucks moving into that region as fast as they can to pick all this stuff up to get it out of there.
If the storm stays on the current track, and this is from the National Weather Service out of Tampa Bay, it will be the worst storm to impact the Tampa area in more than 100 years.
That's right.
Yeah, Tampa Bay has gotten lucky over the past several decades, not taking a direct hit. And if they do take a direct hit, it's going to be bad.
913-586-7798. 913-586-7798. Brian Busby joins us at 2:30 this afternoon here on Dana and Parks. When we were in Cancun, there were a couple of nights when it was raining, so we were just up in the room watching movies. I had never seen The Joker.
The original with Joaquin Phoenix, the first?
Wow.
That is a fantastic
film.
Wow. It's a must-see.
I was enthralled with that. I had never seen it.
It is a mind blank.
Yes. Don't you remember me saying, Scott, in the mind of someone who clearly has mental health issues, the way that they described that issue in its brilliance in Joker with Joaquin Phoenix is that you don't really know from 1 minute to the next in the movie what is really happening or what he thinks in his own warped mind is happening. I've watched it 4 times. I watched it with my daughter a couple weeks ago. And you pick up something new every time you watch it. It is so brilliantly told, but it is graphic and awful.
When he goes on that late night talk show.
With Robert De Niro.
Oh, I mean, you see it coming. I'm not going to give it away.
But you don't.
Right.
And so I don't know if we have the opening numbers over the weekend from the new Lady Gaga.
Not as good as you think.
Joker musical.
Let's just say what happened, because I believe it's the same producers.
I cannot wait to see it.
They were predicting between $50 and $65 million at the box office. Now, it did finish number one, but with only $40 million. It was, as they describe it, a disappointment. But it's also a musical, is it not?
It is being described as a musical, yes.
I'm not going.
Which I think was a massive misstep on their part.
It needs to make $450 million just to break even. It got a tenth of that
now,
over the weekend.
From the text line, I went and saw it this weekend. I thought it was great. You could argue that the first one had musical elements to it. I mean, there were many scenes where...
Where he's walking down the stairs and running and from dancing, the police and dancing. Yeah. You know, there are times where you laugh out loud, and then it's horrifying. I predict it will do well. It's going to pick up steam from word of mouth, because our buddy, a good friend of the show, Brian Shelton, went and saw it over the weekend. I just couldn't get to it this weekend. And I think people think, Scott, correctly so, the leaves are turning. We have 3 or 4 stunning weeks left of autumn in our town. I did not want to spend one of my evenings in a movie theater. As bad as I want to see it.
I didn't know this. This is from Variety. Joker, the first one, was supposed to be a standalone film. There was never supposed to be a sequel. But it made so much money, $1 billion.
Yeah.
And they say in here, Hollywood is Hollywood, after all, so they made a sequel.
Which will largely answer why the second one didn't do so hot in the opening weekend, because they looked at that and thought to themselves, now what do we do?
I will go see it. I'm just going to go see it on a day that it's raining, or, you know, a day that there's nothing going on because of the weather.
Isn't it crazy, though, that a movie has to generate $450 million just to break even, which means the movie cost $450 million to make. I remember, I mean, you want to talk about an obscure movie from the 90s. I remember when Waterworld with Kevin Costner came out in the mid-1990s.
Definitely obscure.
I know. But it was the most expensive movie ever made at the time at $200 million. And people were saying, I mean, he'll never make this money back. They wasted way too much money making this Waterworld, which I think is a great movie, by the way. And it never did make $200 million. Now you have movies that cost $450 million just to make.
Now, $450 is on the high end. I think a $200 million movie would be considered pretty middle of the road.
It still came in number one over the weekend.
Correct.
Ahead of The Wild Robot, whatever that is, and Beetlejuice, which is still smashing attendance records for a sequel. Everyone has gone to see that.
Beetlejuice?
The second one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Panera Bread has settled with the family of an Ivy League student with a heart condition who died after drinking the chain's highly caffeinated charged lemonade drink. Sarah Katz, 21. She was a Penn student with a heart condition called long QT syndrome type 1, who avoided energy drinks because of her doctor's recommendations. The suit said that Katz bought a charged lemonade from a Panera restaurant in September of 2022. Her roommate and close friend telling NBC News she went into cardiac arrest hours after drinking the charged lemonade. Yeah. The lawsuit was the first of four that Panera faced over the beverage. A second lawsuit blamed it for a Florida man's death, while the other two alleged that the charged lemonade caused permanent heart injuries in previously healthy people.
Who drank it, not realizing the extreme caffeine content.
Panera announcing in May they were discontinuing the beverage nationwide. What?
I can't believe it took them that long, honestly.
I do believe it finally came off the store shelves last month. It took them multiple months to
I don't know
get
why.
Rid of the supply. So,
why? When you start getting reports that people are having a heart attack and cardiac issues and the lawsuits are piling up, that is one with the board or whoever's in charge of Panera. I will never understand why it took so long to just pull that. It's not like they were making billions of dollars on one stupid lemonade drink.
But if you announce in May, hey, we're discontinuing the drink.
Let it go.
How hard is it to go out into the lobby?
You unplug the machine.
It's not even plugged in.
I think it was. There were those big.
It was the circulating machine.
Oh, it was the circulating machine.
Constantly moving it around.
You send a corporate directive that says, unplug it.
Yeah.
Get it off the shelf.
You've got vats of the mix at the warehouse that you have to do something with.
Well.
Huh.
We're going to call that a loss.
I mean, they made a lot of money off of this drink. I guarantee you they still made a massive profit off of it,
after the settlements?
Yeah.
So from the text line, who knew that a drink called Charged would be an energy drink? Americans truly are as dumb as they come.
Yeah. Hmm. I will argue that again. And again and again, that it was not marketed or labeled correctly, and it certainly was not put in a good placement spot in the store where anyone could just come up and fill their cup up.
When we get back, Hurricane Milton is now a Category 5 storm. Chief Meteorologist Brian Busby from Channel 9 joins us right after a quick break. Story here from NBC News. Life-threatening storm surges are expected to hit Florida's Gulf Coast this week with the arrival of Hurricane Milton, upgraded this afternoon to a Category 5 hurricane over the southern Gulf of Mexico. The storm first strengthened into a Category 3 hurricane at 7 o'clock this morning. Category 4, 9 o'clock this morning. Category 5 now. The storm is forecast to make landfall Wednesday evening in Florida, which, along with the wider southeastern United States, continues to recover from the impact of Hurricane Helene. Joining us on the KMZ Hotline, Channel 9 Chief Meteorologist Brian Busby. Hello, Brian. Good afternoon.
Hello, Scott. Hello, Dana. Hello, Sam. And Dan.
Hey. Well, here we are again, Brian.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago now, was it?
I just looked at some of the video, Brian, of the debris field somewhere near Tampa that was left behind still from Helene. It is piles and piles and piles for miles. That is now going to be in the way because it hasn't been removed because Milton is knocking on the door. And I don't know anyone that saw this coming as quickly as it has intensified and is heading that way.
That's the problem. This thing really just ramped up very quickly. I mean, it's not like people weren't paying attention to the tropics. We knew something was going to form, maybe not as fast to go from a Category 3 to a Category 5 in less than 12 hours' time. And you're right, Dana, all of that stuff is just going to become projectiles. All that stuff is going to be picked up by 150-plus mile-an-hour sustained winds, not just gusts. And obviously, those are just going to be missiles that are going to go into even standing structures. It's not going to be fun at all, cleanup or afterward.
Well, and Tampa had a contractor who was supposed to come through earlier this week or this week and pick up all that debris. They never showed up. I'm assuming Tampa's going to have a lawsuit against that contractor. But Brian, you mentioned 12 hours. I mean, this storm was Category 3 at 6 o'clock this morning, Kansas City time. Have you ever seen a storm accelerate this quickly?
No, I've never seen one strengthen this fast. And again, it is due to the fact that, and I think, Dana, you coined the same phrase that we've been using. I mean, it's like hot tub like water, 85 degree temperatures of the water. And a hurricane, since it's made out of water, is going to be stronger over water. And Sam and I were talking about this off air before you put me on hold. So hurricanes are stronger over water, just like this dry stuff that we have, this high pressure center, is stronger over land. So once a hurricane makes any sort of contact with land, that's when it starts to splatter apart. So it's probably going to stay fairly strong, at least a Category 4, possibly a Category 3 by the time it hits Tampa. But still, even a Category 3 is considered a major hurricane.
But if these storms are fueled by warm water, why would it go, and I'm glad it would, but why would it go from a Category 5 to a Category 3 before it makes landfall?
Possibly because of something called shear. If it's going to be sheared apart, like if you take three or four pieces of paper and try to break them apart or rip them apart, that's kind of what happens if the winds are changing direction up above this thing. Hurricanes are pretty squat. They're not that tall. So sometimes, especially when they try to develop vertically, sometimes if the winds are at different directions, it will shear them apart. Just again, like taking tissue paper and kind of crumpling it up or tearing it apart. Partially because some of it also, the feeder bands on a hurricane, although the eye is out over the water, some of the feeder bands that it's relying on for its energy could still be over land, which will bring down the intensification as well.
They're expecting up to 15 inches of rain in the Tampa area with this storm. That is catastrophic, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. When you consider that much rain in a short period of time, and although Tampa didn't take a direct hit from Helene, it still has some heavy rain, so the soil is already saturated. Surge and runoff is going to cause some issues. And I'm talking to a colleague of mine who's down there who's, I doubt if we're going to be able to talk to him before it makes landfall, but he's working for one of the TV stations down in Tampa. And he says in the years he's been down there, he hadn't seen anything like this either.
If I'm not mistaken, Brian, the storm from end to end is 360 miles. These storms like Hurricane Helene a couple of weeks ago, Hurricane Milton this week, these are bigger hurricanes than we've ever seen before, as far as the distance of the hurricane.
From tip to tip, yeah. There are some exceptions to it. I mean, like I said, when I was growing up, Hurricane Camille was pretty big as well. In Cleveland, Ohio, where there was a feeder band from it, although the eye was sitting off of New Orleans. Helene was 345 miles. Charlie, back in 2004, was only about 85 miles when it hit land. So, yeah, this one's huge. And, again, it's going to be a little bigger once it's over water as opposed to once it kind of shows up hitting the shore.
I'm looking at some of the storm surge predictions on the Weather Channel now, Brian. We're not going to stop Mother Nature from doing what Mother Nature does. So what is the answer here other than over-preparedness, trying to get people evacuated sooner because the highways are already clogged and some of those folks just got back to try and start the process of cleaning up from Helene? I don't know what the answer is. We've seen insurance companies pulling out. I love Florida. I understand why people want to live there, but this is not sustainable as we have seen it in the last several months.
No, it's not. And again, you know, we don't like to talk about certain topics on Dana and Parks. And one that I know you guys also try to avoid is climate change. It's kind of difficult to turn the blind eye to this and say that nothing's going on. Is it all man-made? No. Is it all cyclical with the natural cycle of the planet? No. It's a combination of both. That still doesn't mean we should ignore it. So something is going on. The biggest thing is I think that we just need to at least consider throwing more money toward these sort of developments and trying to rebuild, and also try to talk about research. What can be done to try to predict some of these a little farther out, a little more accurately? But quite frankly, I mean, the western coast of Florida looks like it is at least within the bullseye from Florida, probably down to, down to farther southeast. That would be, man, I'm just looking. It may, I mean, I guess they're going to put watches all the way down toward Miami, but still, it looks like the central portion of the west coast of Florida is definitely in the bullseye.
I mean, that would put almost the, if that's accurate, all the way down to Miami, and of course, it would go north and west over to Tallahassee and to the Panhandle. That would almost put the entire state of Florida under some sort of storm watcher warning.
True. Again, that's the western half of Florida. The east coast, by the time it crosses over the peninsula, it's going to weaken a little bit. But as far as the surge is concerned, I'm looking at it at the National Hurricane Center, which is NHC, that's November Hotel Charlie.NOAA.gov. There's a peak storm surge forecast that they have up to 3 feet. That's up toward Tallahassee, as you mentioned. And down toward Miami, it's going to be fairly, maybe up to 6 feet. But pretty much from Tampa, a little farther down the coast, to Inglewood, at least up to 12 feet of surge.
Wow. Can you define surge for us? What does that mean for average people like Dana and me?
Well, it just means that it is going to be a wall of water per se, but it's also going to have to be tied to high tide, which is going to make it even worse. Hold on 1 second. Let me figure out when high tide is going to be for Tampa. I just saw that. I was looking at it. Wednesday morning at 5:51 a.m. Thursday at 6:50 a.m. That's going to be high tide for Tampa. And obviously, if this thing hits on Wednesday during high tide, that's going to cause even more issues. Right now, over 6 million people are under hurricane watches. Basically, it is going to be, as you see these waves move in, especially being pushed by 170-mile-an-hour winds, and these waves are moving and crashing on shore, that's just going to cause a lot of damage as it laps on shore, after one after the other, if you can understand that. I mean, it just comes in like those waves that we find very relaxing, but imagine that if it's 15 feet tall and it's moving in and lapping on shore that often. That's pretty much the surge.
Brian, normally when we think of hurricanes, we think of storms that develop off the west coast of Africa and slowly but surely make their way across the Atlantic Ocean and then strike either in the Caribbean or somewhere along the east coast of the United States, normally around Florida or Georgia or South Carolina. This is two major storms in a row, Helene and Milton, that have started in the Caribbean on the northwestern coast of South America. Is that unusual?
It is unusual, but, you know, honestly, just like everything else, and I've said this before, meteorology is a relatively young science. We're still learning. It's not that we've had a lot of opportunity or a lot of decades to look at previous data to figure out what's going on. Remember, not too long ago, we were saying in tornadoes, go to the southwest corner of the basement or open up the windows to equalize the pressure. Well, obviously, we don't say that anymore because with research, we've learned that that's probably not a hard rule that's going to be followed without exception. And we're finding out that there are going to be exceptions. The ones that are breaking the rules, if you will, are the ones that usually become more catastrophic. And that's what we're noticing here with Helene and also Milton, that it is not taking its time across the Atlantic from the west coast of Africa, intensifying as it goes. It is intensifying pretty much closer to the Caribbean Sea. Not saying that has not happened before, but it is seeming to happen more frequently, again, due to the fact that the water is so much warmer these days.
Channel 9 Chief Meteorologist Brian Busby, do appreciate your expertise and your time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys. Look forward to seeing you guys in person.
Be well.
Be well, my friend.
Take care.
All right, that is Brian Busby, Chief Meteorologist at Channel 9 here on Dana and Parks. I believe she will be at Arrowhead tonight. Taylor Swift has officially surpassed Rihanna as the richest female musician in the world. Taylor Swift, 34 years old, is now worth $1.6 billion. Rihanna, 36, is worth $1.4.
Just start adding zeros. She's worth more.
Wow. Swift also has an estimated $125 million in real estate holdings. She has homes in Rhode Island, New York City, Nashville, Los Angeles, hopefully someday soon Kansas City.
Kansas City. Oh, she's got a home here.
She's got two.
Her Eras Tour has grossed more than $2 billion.
She has single-handedly moved nation's gross domestic product.
Recently named the Time Magazine Person of the Year.
I listened to Guilty as Sin on a loop from the Fortnite album 36 times over the weekend. She's brilliant. Okay. She's absolutely brilliant.
By the way, even with $1.6 billion, she ranks 2,117th on the Forbes list of billionaires.
Who are those other ding-a-lings? What did they do?
2,117th. On the list of world billionaires.
No, the better question is, what did we do wrong?
Bingo.
Yeah. Yes.
There it is.
Yes.
The movie Rust will premiere at a film festival next month. God,
why?
3 years after cinematographer Helena Hutchins was killed in a shooting incident on the set of the Western, the world premiere screening will take place at the Energo Camera Image.
Yeah, common spelling.
It's the only one they could get to accept it.
Festival.
I'm telling you.
Poland.
Why?
In Poland.
Yeah. Why?
On November 23rd.
Because a lot of people had a lot of money invested and they wanted to see the end of their investment.
No one is going to see that movie.
You're not
going to
go?
No. You understand there is going to be some moment, I presume, in that film where they are in an old dusty church. Mm-hmm. And Alex Baldwin, his character, pulls out a gun and fires. And all anyone is going to be thinking is that was the moment.
You don't think they would rewrite that
when
scene?
When they were practicing that scene that a woman was shot and killed. I don't give two blanks about that movie.
Now, we didn't end up talking about the lawsuit or the trial aftermath after Alec Baldwin's was dismissed because of evidence that was withheld from the trial.
Yeah, the prosecutorial misconduct.
Yeah, Gutierrez, who was the armorer, filed suit saying, well, I get a retrial, or you at least need to let me out of jail. And they said, well, the prosecutorial misconduct applied to Baldwin, but not you.
Yeah, Scott, I think this was why you were gone, and we didn't bring this up. Hmm. Alec Baldwin, basically, it's over. They said, look, prosecutors withheld evidence, knowingly withheld evidence. They found out. The defense filed this motion. The judge says there's no denying it. Trial's over. Bye-bye. Nothing is going to come of that. Gutierrez, her trial went first.
She's the armorer.
Yes. Okay. Obviously, if they withheld the ballistic evidence from the Baldwin defense team, they withheld the same evidence from her.
And so her lawyers filed a motion saying, hey, what the heck's going on
here? What about us over here? Hello?
Oh, well,
and she's still in prison?
You're staying in jail.
And they ruled no. This was really just on the Baldwin trial.
It doesn't apply to you.
Is this and nothing against it, but is this a small town kind of prosecutor's office?
I think it's in Santa Fe, New Mexico, isn't it, Sam?
That's a good question.
So that would not be small town.
I do not believe this is a small town.
Huh.
I do not believe that to be true.
Okay. Verizon has confirmed that it experienced its second outage in 1 week earlier today, leaving some of its wireless customers unable to complete calls made by or to landlines. Beg your pardon. Quoting here from a statement from Verizon, some Verizon wireless customers experienced a short service disruption when calling landlines this morning, as if there still are some. The outage lasted for a few minutes and is now resolved.
Twice in
How did they even know there was an outage? Because no one called in on a cell phone going, why don't my landline work? Marge, we're getting to it.
Well, no, that would be Verizon customers trying to reach a landline.
For
example, last week we were trying to speak to a well-known economist and couldn't get a hold of him because of the Verizon outage, because this is a landline here in the studio and I was trying to ring his Verizon phone.
Great point on the text line. Brandon Lee was shot and killed on the set of The Crow, and it was a box office hit.
It was a little bit different, wasn't it?
Was it?
Yes. That was a fragment from...
A blank.
Shrapnel, yeah.
It was shrapnel. Still devastating. Still a death.
Still avoidable, potentially.
But not, oh, we got a bunch of bullets in a box here. Here's a gun. Fire it. I mean, this was just...
I like that accent. Let's go out shooting.
Well,
that's pretty much what they
did. Basically what happened.
Somebody says the scene in Rust has been taken out of the movie. That they rewrote that part of the movie.
I don't know why. I still have zero interest in seeing that. When we get back in the 3 o'clock hour, I'm so excited for you to hear this story, Scott, but I'm more excited to talk to her. We have a young woman, local case, and something very important to her was lost. It is still not found. She is offering a $1,000 reward. It's something very simple. It's not worth $5 to you and I. It's worth everything to her after the loss of her father, and we'll speak to her straight ahead on Dana and Parks.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.